Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link, hoping you had a festive and enjoyable Christmas. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Our main stories this Monday, the 28th of December. Burundi's rival factions are in Entebbe for peace talks meant to end the violence amid looming national elections in Uganda.
There were other people still thinking that the dialogue is no longer necessary because elections are taking place. Others were saying, no, we've been locked out, there should be a dialogue.
And what are U.S. troops doing in Cameroon?
I do not understand what is happening. We expected them to fight alongside our soldiers and defeat Boko Haram, but they have stayed in their offices since they came.
We shall uncover more of that story in this edition of Africa Link. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Make or break talks. That is what is at stake in Entebbe, Uganda, as Burundi's rival factions meet to try and end months of political unrest. Amongst those in attendance are government officials, as well as opposition members and civil society representatives. The talks come just days after a renegade top Burundian army officer, Edouard Nshimirimana, announced the launch of a new rebel group aimed at toppling President Nkurunziza. The meeting also takes place as Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, who is mediating the Burundi crisis, is engaged in election campaigns. Isaac Mugabe with more on that story.
Uganda has resumed peace negotiations between opposition groups and the government of Burundi. A key opposition coalition, SENARED, is also due to attend. Burundi's government has, however, so far refused to hold talks with SENARED, calling it a terrorist organization and accusing it of being behind a failed coup in May, as well as ongoing attacks on security forces. But troubleshooter Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni insists the two opposing sides can still find a solution to the crisis. Okello Oryema is Uganda's foreign affairs minister.
There were other people still thinking that the dialogue is no longer necessary because elections are taking place. Others were saying, no, we've been locked out, there should be a dialogue. So those, what I described simply as wide-ranging consultations, have taken this long because it has taken this long to evolve that consensus that we should go to the negotiating table.
During a special session of the Human Rights Council on Burundi in Geneva on Thursday, the UN Human Rights Commissioner Zaid Raad Al Hussein said that the country is at a bursting point and on the very cusp of a civil war.
I regret that the authorities have yet to carry out effective investigations concerning the vast majority of cases of serious violations and abuses of human rights, such as reports of extrajudicial killings, including with ethnic overtones or undertones. Impunity currently enjoyed by perpetrators of human rights violations, as well as by members of unidentified armed groups, is contributing to individuals increasingly taking the law into their own violent hands.
The Ugandan mediating group said the situation is dire.
We are desperate. We want things to change. We want life to start in Burundi. When we see all that mass of youth that are there without hope, without future, we say life should begin in Burundi. And for life to begin in Burundi, there must be a change.
The U.S. has joined in the call for a UN convention to the crisis. Keith Harper is the U.S. ambassador to the UN Human Rights Council.
The United States is deeply alarmed by the spiraling violence in Burundi, perpetrated or directed by government and non-government actors alike. The United States strongly believes that the international community must use all the tools available to push for an immediate end of the cycle of violence perpetrated by both the security forces and elements of the armed opposition.
That report was compiled by Isaac Mugabe. Burundi was to receive a seat at the UN Human Rights Council on the 1st of January. Instead, the Council decided to suspend Burundi from all of its activities, citing serious human rights violations. As Apollinaire Niyerora reports from Bujumbura, this decision has shocked many local rights defenders.
Burundi's National Independent Human Rights Commission has criticized the decision of the United Nations Human Rights Council, UNHRC, to suspend Burundi from the organization. The local rights body said the UNHRC failed to consult them before making the decision. The commission's chairman, Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza, claimed that the decision will tarnish Burundi's image.
In this case, there might be much more impact perhaps on the country's image. And in that case, it's not straightforward, but if you take a country as a whole, the impact might be visible on the population.
Jean-Marie Vianney Gatogato, a human rights lawyer and a coordinator of the Burundi Catholic Lawyers Association, said the decision is regrettable, but the country, however, deserves it, considering the increase in human rights abuses.
I was sad to hear that Burundi has been suspended from that important organization which defends human rights abuses. I had assumed that the UN body provides an opportunity for us to make progress as a country. I think that it is really unfortunate, but at the same time we have to consider the reason for the decision. It is in response to what is happening in our country. Frankly speaking, there are serious human rights violations and abuses happening in our country every day. In that regard, the UNHCRC made the right decision.
La mesure est corrective.
Burundi has been rocked by violence since April when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would run for a third term. A very complex and ununited opposition have been contesting Nkurunziza's bid, citing the 2000 Arusha Peace and Reconciliation Agreement that ended more than a decade of civil war. Nkurunziza was re-elected in July and the violence has since escalated. But Gatogato said the suspension of Burundi from the UNHRC will have negative impacts on citizens as international donors will no longer release money badly needed in the impoverished East African nation.
Le processus de retrait de Burundi.
Now all of our donor partners will be careful when dealing with Burundi as a result of human rights record. Their donors provide financial and technical support to us, but are now perhaps considering pulling the plugs.
La solidité des rapports est remise en cause.
The suspension is one of the first steps taken by the United Nations for a matter to end in the UN Security Council. So far, the Security Council has left matters in the hands of the AU.
Apollinaire Niyirora reporting from Bujumbura. And still to come, a new series of our investigative Learning by Ear radio drama, Crime Fighters.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Nearly 2 months have passed since U.S. President Barack Obama deployed hundreds of troops in Garoua, northern Cameroon. They were sent to help fight the Nigerian Islamist group Boko Haram. Many Cameroonians are now asking what role the U.S. soldiers are playing while the insurgents remain active in the region. Our correspondent Moki Kinzeka has been to Garoua and filed this report, which begins with one of the residents.
I do not understand what is happening. We expected them to fight alongside our soldiers and defeat Boko Haram. But they have stayed in their offices since they came. Why can't they attack Boko Haram? As we hear, they have attacked Islamic State military bases in Iraq.
Avec les djihadistes, les terroristes en Irak.
That is 30-year-old Buba Ahijo, youth leader at the Garoua Central Mosque. The young man says he has no clue what the American troops have been doing. This kind of curiosity from Ahijo and other residents led me to visit the U.S. camp to find out what exactly their mission is. I arrived in the camp in the early hours of the morning when the U.S. troops were listening to an official hymn of their Marine Corps. The head of the Marines, Colonel Mike Davis, declined an interview, but from a distance said they were supporting the Cameroon Army in the fight against Boko Haram.
Cameroonian government asked the United States government to support them in their fight against Boko Haram. So what we are doing is assisting the Cameroonian government in their fight against Boko Haram. That support is in the way of a remotely piloted aircraft, among other things, training, some security stuff.
To get a better understanding of what Davis was saying, I asked General Njonkep Mihomi Frederick, one of the top commanders of Cameroon's military, what assistance they have received from the Americans.
La nature de leur contribution est liée aux capteurs qu'ils ont, c'est des drones.
They have excellent and up-to-date drones that give them vital and timely information, and then they advise us to surgically intervene where an attack is taking place or is being planned. These Americans have been fully cooperating in surveillance and information sharing, which is very vital in the war against Boko Haram.
Cameroon's military says people should not expect U.S. troops on the battlefront, but that they are instrumental in defeating the Islamist insurgents. And as proof of that successful cooperation, this December, Cameroon announced its soldiers and Nigeria's military had liberated more than 900 people from Boko Haram's strongholds.
Moki Kinzeka reporting from Garoua, northern Cameroon. To Ethiopia now, where cheap labor and a stable political environment is attracting foreign investment. Global textile brands like Swedish giant H&M have now started producing from Ethiopia. With a population of 96 million people, most of them young, Africa's second most populous nation is becoming a choice for investors, especially from China. But it's not all bread and butter for the workers, as our correspondent Andrea Dijkstra found out in this report.
This is our production hall. This is a shirt line.
Sewing machines are rattling in the big factory of Gigi Supergarment in Debrecen, some 45 kilometers south of the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa. Hundreds of women and a few men are sewing singlets and t-shirts. The garments are destined for the export to Europe, says General Manager Joseph Eliso.
We have around 5 customers, and one of our customers is H&M.
As a result of rising salaries and growing labor unrest in Asia, an increasing number of foreign companies have been starting to move part of their production to Ethiopia, where conditions are more favorable, Manager Eliso explains. One of these companies is the Swedish company H&M, which is one of the customers of Gigi Supergarment.
Big companies come to Ethiopia because condition is very good, peaceful, stability, and labor cost is very cheap.
Entry-level salaries for workers in Ethiopia's textile industry range from $35 to $40 per month. That's even lower than a minimum wage of $68 per month in Bangladesh and far below the average wage of $500 in the Chinese textile sector. Ethiopia doesn't have a minimum wage, and due to high unemployment, workers are often forced to accept whatever wage is offered. Although Ethiopian workers are happy that increasing foreign investment is bringing jobs, they struggle to make ends meet. Like 23-year-old worker Tijista Shom, dressed in a checkered pinafore, who gets 850 Ethiopian birr per month, which is around $40.
I only get around 850 birr per month. Currently, I'm living with friends to share the costs, but I would like to live in a place of my own. But rent alone is already 600 birr. And how will I manage to pay for food and clothing?
Despite paying such low salaries, Gigi Supergarment doesn't face any problems finding enough personnel, says manager Eliso.
Labor force is available. In one person leave, another person come here.
Gigi Supergarment's factory does look neat, though. The workers don't work more than 8 hours a day, and the company has a labor union, who, according to manager Eliso, made some agreements about annual salary increases.
There is a strong union. We support them. If the work is very good, every year there is salary increment according to our agreement.
Workers don't know anything about this social agreement and are afraid to talk with me about it.
Andrea Dijkstra reporting. And time now to stop the poachers in our Learning by Ear radio drama, Crime Fighters. Enjoy.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there and welcome to Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers, brought to you by DW. The author is James Mahando with a special contribution from South African crime writer Andrew Brown. Today the story opens with the first episode entitled A Knife in the Chest. Come with us to a little African town called Bovu, the home of Patrick Ugunza and his wife Lucy. Patrick is 23 years old and used to work as a veterinarian, but he recently lost his job. Bovu is usually a quiet town, but right now there's a lot of commotion. Patrick and Lucy's neighbor has called the police. So what's going on? Join us and find out.
Mm.
received a call about a disturbance here.
Yeah.
Are you the one who made the call?
In there. It's not a disturbance. It's a bloodbath. My neighbor, the veterinarian, he's dead. Killed. Stabbed to death.
My goodness. I know the people who live here. It's Patrick and his wife, Lucy, right? What happened?
There she goes. She's trying to run away. Get her.
Hey.
Get her.
Stop. Lucy, where are you going? Quick, officer, catch her.
Yes, Detective Allan. Got you.
Leave me alone. I didn't do it.
Come on, let's go. Move.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it, Allan. Please believe me.
Okay, Lucy. I'll talk to you later. Officer, please take her to the police station.
Yes, sir. Come on. Let's go. Move. Mind your head. Get in.
All right, then. Better check out the crime scene. Has a forensics expert arrived yet? What's her name? Amanda? Samantha? Yeah, that's it. Sam. Ah, there she is. Good afternoon, Sam.
Oh, good afternoon, Detective Allan. Shall we get started?
Yeah, let's go to the crime scene. Oh, no, this is horrific.
Are you okay, sir?
I'll be fine. It's just that I know this man. Let's get on with it.
Okay. Let me take a look.
Now, where did I put that tape recorder? Where? Here it is.
Victim is male, mid-20s. Probable cause of death? Stab wound to the chest. Rigor mortis hasn't set in yet, so the victim has been dead for less than 2 hours. We have to take the body to the morgue so I can examine it more closely.
Right.
Before I leave, I'll need to dust for fingerprints and take pictures of the crime scene.
Sure, go ahead. I'll talk to the neighbor who called us.
While the police are examining the crime scene, Mona, the victim's sister, is at her workplace in a hotel.
Ugh. Oh, man.
Hey, what is it, Mona? You look frustrated.
I am frustrated, Judy. This job is frustrating.
Why? A few months ago, you thought your job here at the hotel was the best in the world.
A few months ago, there were lots of tourists who tipped really well. Now there's just Mr. Grumpy over there. He's our only client, and you know he never tips.
Tell me about it. Yesterday, the best he could manage was to offer me a drink he couldn't finish. How's that for tipping?
Well, I guess we shouldn't complain. At least we still have jobs. Not like Ruth and John who lost theirs.
Hey, you two! Are you just going to stand there like wet sex? I need some service at this table. What's wrong with you people? Unbelievable.
Uh-oh. There goes Mr. Grumpy again.
I'd better see what he wants. Come in, sir. Just a moment, please. Hello? Yes, she's here. Mona, it's for you.
Thanks, Judy. This is Mona. Hello? What? Patrick? Oh my God. No. No.
What is it, Mona?
It's my brother. He's been murdered.
Oh, Mona, I'm so sorry. Good no. Heavens, what happened?
Meanwhile, Allan has taken Eunice to the police station. She's Lucy and Patrick's nosy old neighbor. She was the one who called the police to the crime scene, and Allan wants to know what exactly she saw.
Eunice Gamma, right?
Yes, officer.
I'm going to turn on the tape to record the interview. Is that okay?
Of course, young man. You go ahead.
Interview with Eunice Gamma, neighbor of the deceased Patrick Igunza and his wife, suspect Lucy Igunza. All right, So, Eunice, please tell me exactly what happened.
His wife. She killed him.
How do you know it was her who killed Patrick?
I saw her through the window. She had the knife in her hands. That's when I called you.
Did you see her stab him?
She did it. I know she did.
But did you see the actual stabbing?
I peered through the window, and there he was lying on the floor. And his wife was bent over his body holding the knife. Oh, there was blood everywhere.
But that doesn't necessarily mean she killed Patrick. She might have been trying to save him.
Young man, she's your killer, that Lucy. No question about it. The two were fighting earlier, and I heard her with my own two ears. She said, "I'll kill you, Patrick. I'll kill you."
And did she also say why she wanted to kill him?
Patrick was having an affair.
Oh, an affair? Do you know who with?
No, but I would hear him with the other woman when Lucy was at work. Patrick had been fired, you see. So he had plenty of time during the day to, you know...
Okay, Eunice, thank you. You can go now. We'll contact you again if we have any other questions.
While Alan's been talking to Eunice to try and find out the truth, his colleague, Sam, from the forensics department, has been busy working other angles, and she has some news for Alan.
This is Detective Alan. Hello?
Hello. This is Sam from the forensics department. I'm calling about the Patrick Kigunza murder.
Oh, yes. Hi, Sam. I've been waiting for your call. Any luck identifying the fingerprints on the murder weapon?
Yes and no, Detective. As you can imagine, we confirmed that the suspect's fingerprints were indeed all over the knife.
You mean Lucy's?
Yes.
No wonder if it was a knife from her kitchen.
But we also found another set of prints on the knife that we can't identify.
Oh, really?
Yes. And get this, Detective Allen. There was yet another different and not yet identified set of prints on the victim's computer.
Interesting. So this means there might have been other people at the crime scene.
It's a strong possibility, yes.
And have you had a chance to look at the deceased's phone records?
Not yet, but we are working on it. And we'll be sure to let you know as soon as we have more information.
Good work. Thanks a lot, Sam. I have to talk to Lucy urgently. I wonder what she can tell me about this horrible story.
And with that, we end this first episode of our new series. What's your impression of it so far? Let us know on Facebook. You can also discuss it with other listeners. And if you'd like to listen to the episode again, just go to dw.com/crimefighters. Be sure to tune in to the next episode of On the Trail of the Poachers. Until then, goodbye.
And you can listen to a rerun of that episode of Crime Fighters on Thursday right here on Africa Link. As always, before we go, a reminder of our main stories. Rival factions in the Burundi conflict are today meeting in Uganda to seek ways of ending months of violence. Cameroonian army officials have praised the role of US military assistance in the fight against Boko Haram. We've also been hearing about the plight of Ethiopian workers in foreign-owned companies. But that's about it for today. We welcome your thoughts on the stories we've aired here on Africa Link. Just send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160. 957-59510. Thank you for listening. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, have a good day and take care.